It's Comedy at the Carlson Cast with your host, Mr. Vinny Paulino. Sitting next to him is the borderline bearable Brian Ball. There he goes, back down into his hole. I'm the absolutely adorable Nick Levasseur, and today we've got the Sklar Brothers. Let's send it over to your host, Mr. Vinny Paulino.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the Comedy at the Carlson Cast, coming to you live from inside of one of the country's greatest comedy clubs, Comedy at the Carlson in Rochester, New York.
What?
Good morning, Nicholas.
Hi, what's going on, Vinny?
My favorite co-host. And, Brian Ball's here, too.
Yeah, it's me. Yeah, I think we can stop saying one of the best clubs. I think we can drop the one of.
Mm-hmm. You know, I find it interesting that the thing that he objected to was not me referring to Nick as my favorite co-host. You notice that? There was like no...
I've become numb to that.
Right.
I've got a Stockholm syndrome. I don't even notice it anymore.
All right. I'm going to go with you. Coming to you live from inside of the greatest comedy club in America, it's Comedy at the Carlson. Huzzah, boys. Huzzah. Big show today. We have the Sklar Brothers coming in. Let me tell you about these guys if you don't know who they are. Three comedy albums, four comedy specials, multiple TV appearances, directors, movies. Writers, actors, movies. They've done it all, and they're going to be here right on our magical couch in just a little bit.
Between the two of them, they're 12 people.
I don't think that checks out math-wise. I think you're wrong.
Nick's my favorite. Is my favorite.
No, they do a lot of stuff.
Well, I'm excited to talk to these guys, so I have a lot of questions for them. Very interesting. But we're going to get to them in just a little bit. Before we do, I want to remind you to please be so kind as to subscribe to our YouTube channel or our iTunes and check out the show. You could get just an audio version, or you could get the full video. Watch them both. And if you are subscribing to the YouTube channel, we got some new surprises coming for you.
Bonus content.
We got some new bonus content coming out. We're going to be adding a special playlist to the channel that is specifically only for our YouTube channel. And that is going to be all about comics giving advice to new performers. So keep an eye out for that. If you're just learning and you want to be a stand-up, make sure you subscribe so you don't want to miss any of those. And we're also going to be doing a little thing called Comedy at the Carlson, live from my attic.
A terrifying place.
It gets weird.
There are a lot of whips and chains.
It's a lot of...
Surprisingly, not as many.
They're action figure size.
yeah, they're just action figure size.
Yeah, there's more pillows and...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Interesting posters.
Yeah, lots of posters. I'm a 10-year-old.
Lots of pictures of me.
There's tons of them. Yeah. They're everywhere.
There's always something to look at in Vinny's attic when you're trying to forget.
But don't touch.
Vinny's attic.
But don't you touch. So yeah, we're doing that, and we're going to be showing clips from the performers. I'm going to be giving you guys a little insight into how we get ready for these interviews. If you want to check that out, please do subscribe, and don't forget to leave a review. You guys ready to hit the sponsors?
Oh man, I was born ready to hit some sponsors.
All right, well, hit me! Iron Smoke Whiskey, baby.
Hoo-ah!
Yeah! Handcrafted in upstate New York. Even be a little more specific right here in Rochester. Available in two varieties, Applewood Smoked Whiskey or Rattlesnake Rosie's Apple Pie Whiskey. IronSmokeWhiskey.com, baby. Nick, do it. Do it.
Put it in me.
Holy crap. Brian trying to get on the Nick wagon.
I clapped along.
He did. He clapped along. That's right. Sapori Cafe Catering. Put it in me.
It's worth clapping for.
At Sapori Rochester, let me tell you something. If you've never had it, it's on you. It's on you. You're a fool. Yeah. You go have lunch there at the Powers Building Atrium. That's where we're going. Tennis Club of Rochester. And your very special event. They will gladly cater your event. And if you have a party, you could book one right here at Comedy at the Carlson. And guess what? Chef Joe will cater it for you. You can order them on Grubhub. Find them on Facebook or Instagram at Sapori Rochester. It's almost a shame. I'm so hungry I have to move on. But I'll tell you what, I like our next sponsor, ladies and gentlemen. It is Three Heads Brewing.
That'll make you forget you're hungry.
Let me tell you something about Three Heads Brewing, ladies and gentlemen. Not only are they supporting the arts locally by having amazing concerts and shows at their brewery, you could get their beer in Wegmans now.
What? Yep, I purchased it there just the other day.
Yep, I bought a 6-pack of Tropical Kind when I was in Wegmans the other day, and boy, was I happy about that decision.
It's the same thing I got.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's delicious. It's dangerous. Dangerously delicious.
Well, we finally found something we could agree on.
Yeah.
good stuff. And if you've never been to the brewery, you should probably check that out, too. You'll have a very fun evening. And if you're coming to a show at Comedy at the Carlson, we always have three varieties on tap. This week, I think we have Bromigo, The Kind.
That's good. I meant
and
that
I'm not sure if we sell Tropical Kind or not, but there's three of them. Come get one. And last but not least, certainly not least, Nick, how is your vape dripping?
Bad, but in the good Michael Jackson way.
Shemona. Bad drip, baby. BadDripLabs.com.
Oh, yeah.
You can get it at any smoke shop locally, anywhere, probably around the world, actually. They
all
ship
over the place.
To Europe.
Yeah.
They ship to as far away as California.
California, eh?
Oh.
That's all the world that matters.
I'm telling you, Bad Blood, Ugly Butter, Farley's Gnarly Sauce, Cereal Trip, those are all available from Bad Drip. And not to mention, they have a second brand called Clown that, Nick, you seem to be a really big fan of.
I really dig it. They're a little bit more kind of like candy flavors. Right now I have Twisty. It's raspberry yogurt, which is crazy, but it's really solid.
All right.
They done good.
BadDripLabs.com. Follow them on Instagram because they have all sorts of interesting things that they're doing on there. And if you're going to go use your vape, make sure you put a little Bad Drip in it, baby. And we're going to show their little ad, and we are going to be back with Randy and Jason Sklar. See you in just a few. Everybody, we are back in the studio, and I got to tell you, I am thrilled to have our guests in studio today. With us, we have the Sklar Brothers.
Hey!
Jason and Randy.
Great to be here. So happy to be in Rochester. Beautiful time of year. The Genesee River is turning more brown.
Just a beautiful, gorgeous shade of brown.
It is a beautiful shade of brown at this point.
It's more of a burnt umber.
It's a burnt umber.
Yeah.
Just flows right into one of the Great Lakes. It's beautiful.
We've been dumping chemicals in it for your arrival.
Kodak chemicals?
Yes.
Just dumping?
We got nothing else to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, look, what else is... Yeah, I mean, nothing else is happening in Kodak.
Yeah,
so,
they're not selling the chemicals.
They're busy tearing down buildings, but that's neither here nor there.
No vacant buildings at all in downtown Rochester.
Not a one.
Not one?
We have the most beautiful vacant buildings.
You do. As far as vacant buildings go, and you have a gorgeous falls. It's almost like the, it's like a Shetland Niagara Falls.
Exactly.
Someone went over in a barrel and got a nasty splinter.
Yeah, you can't even commit suicide.
But it was very difficult to do. I actually really like the Xerox building, which is also empty. It looked like
a copy of another building.
Yeah, I know.
That's the dumbest joke I've ever seen.
Why would
you? Get me out! Get me out of here.
That was terrible.
Listen, I'm sorry. I did that joke last week, so
of course. My man.
Okay.
That was a copy of a joke that you did last week.
2 for 2.
I had to bring it back.
Layers, baby, layers. So, Randy, Jason, thank you for coming today. There are going to be four more shows here at Comedy at the Carlson this weekend. You can get your tickets right now at carlsoncomedy.com or 585-4-COMEDY. The phones have been ringing off the hooks.
By the way, amazing venue. Okay, so you know we travel around. I mean, you guys are here.
Yes.
And you guys, this is what you know.
It's hard to have perspective of how this sort of stacks up against the rest of the country.
This is one of the best comedy clubs in the country, and it's in Rochester. Dude, you guys don't even realize. Like,
we've been to
way bigger cities, some cities that people would say are on the rise. I would argue, you know, there are great comedy clubs all over. There's not a comedy club in downtown Seattle or in Seattle that rivals this club, and that's one of the top cities in this country. Like, you guys have it here. You're bringing...
So, great room, bring great comedians. There's a great... The ownership here is really good, and that they care about the type of comedy they want to bring. They treat the people well. And then we came up and did our show last night. And again, Thursday night, a nice crowd of people, like a large number of people, and they were awesome.
Yeah.
Now, that's what I heard. Nick got your show last night. Nick, did you have a good time?
It was great. I enjoyed it thoroughly. You guys are super impressive to watch, like, in action.
Thank you. No,
and suck at Seattle.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No, it's different. Yeah. It's different than
we
regular
love Seattle, but we're like, well, you guys need a club. You need one of these. I mean, and here's the deal. Like, what we do is different than any other stand-up comedian because there are two of us on stage, and it's, you know, we break into little scenes. When there are act outs, we can really take it further. It's not fully sketch. It is stand up, but there's a relationship going on stage that isn't overt. There's not a straight man and a funny man because we want to be.
It asks a lot of the audience.
Right.
And so last night, the audience was right there with us the whole time, and it was just great.
You know, Rochester, not to toot our own horns, again, we are a comedy city. We love stand up, and we have this beautiful club here because we love stand up so much.
Yeah. It's a testament. It really is. It's one of those, like, Field of Dreams moment. You built it, and everybody came.
Well, that's exactly what I told...
All over the club.
That's exactly what I told Mark when he showed me this building.
Yeah.
We pulled into the empty parking lot, and it was a factory, and he goes,
yeah,
what do you think? And I said, if you build it, they
will come. Yeah, and it did. And look at what's happening now. And we'll go back on our podcast, and we'll tell, and go back in the comedy community in L.A. and just talk about how great this club is.
Well, we really appreciate it.
Yeah,
we
for
really
sure.
Do.
For sure.
So let's talk about you guys for a little bit, if that's all right.
Sure.
Let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
You were born roughly the same time.
Came from roughly the same place.
Well, we met on an audition.
You know how you start to look like the other people you're reading against?
An audition to be mothers.
Exactly.
We got the part to be twins.
Congratulations.
This has been in the brewing for many, many, many years.
We grew up in St. Louis.
We were comedy nerds, big time comedy nerds. So, like, we were watching Rodney Dangerfield's Young Comedian special. I remember watching, like, early Seinfeld, pre his HBO special, obviously pre Seinfeld. And we were like, this guy's hilarious.
The Tonight Show stuff.
We're like,
oh, yeah, that's right.
Why is it, like, this guy's so funny and people don't know about him? No one's going to know who Seinfeld is. It's a shame that he's never going to be known and we're the only guys who know
him. You're like the guys that discovered Pearl Jam.
Right.
Yeah.
So at least we're good evaluators.
We're good evaluators of talent, but terrible predictors of success.
That's right.
There it is.
Here's how successful Seinfeld is. We were in Chicago with a buddy who co-hosts our podcast, Dan Van Kirk, one of our podcasts, Dumb People Town. He's got a cabin up in Montello. His family has a cabin up in Montello, Wisconsin, which is
up near the Dells.
Right. So it's about an hour and a half north of Chicago. We go up to the cabin for a night, and we're at this, like, on the next morning, it's like a Sunday morning, we're at this, like, breakfast place, and people are either dressed in church clothes or camouflage because they just went hunting.
Right.
That's the only kind of clothes they have.
Oh, yeah. Put it this way. That's it. Put it this way. We pull up in the parking lot, and there's a truck is open with its flatbed open, and there are just 8 dead deer just, like, hanging out.
God.
Just bleeding
facing
out.
Facing
the restaurant. So, like, from the show window, the window where you can see is just
kind of like that lobster tank.
Yeah, it's just 8 dead deer. One. Yeah, I'll take that one.
Select. So
they're all there,
want.
And you go inside, and it's church clothes and camouflage, and there are pictures on the wall of the fire department just smiling in front of houses that are burning.
controlled burns
and that. So those pictures on the wall, and then next to that is a picture of the soup Nazi from Seinfeld. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Seinfeld made it. Yeah, I was like, but Seinfeld made it. A show about like a Jewish New York made its way to this hunting, churchy little, like, play, and they put the picture on the wall.
So what is the comedy takeaway from that, right? What do you as comedians take away from that thing? And that is, do the kind of comedy that you love and people will come to it. Don't try to create something that everybody else is going to love and you think is going to be the broadest thing that the whole country is going to get behind, or the people up in this cabin are going to like, and the people in New York. Do the thing that you think is the funniest.
Because it'll make it there.
Because if Larry David walked around and pitched a show and was like, it's going to be a show about a rich Hollywood guy playing golf with his friends, right, and it's really not about anything, no one would ever buy it. But he made the show he wanted to make. Obviously, it helps that he was who he was.
And people love it.
And people love it. Everyone loves it.
Right. What was interesting about Larry David was he did like a 1-hour special of Curb Your Enthusiasm, didn't he? Almost like it's like a mini movie.
So it was supposed to be
years before.
So it was supposed to be his stand up special and
on HBO. Yeah,
and he was trying stuff out at Largo, which is where we perform a lot in LA, which is a great venue in LA. And they sort of came up with the idea along with Jeff Garland about, like, let's make your stand-up special
about doing your special. So all the stand-up leading up to it, and you kind
of
see,
and then we'll get some loose storylines of comedy in there, and I'll play your manager. And all of a sudden, like, the loose idea of the show came about when it was based on a special. And here's a little interesting tidbit about Seinfeld. No one wanted to make Seinfeld the TV show.
Right.
So much so that the only way NBC made it was they got it. They didn't sell it as a half-hour primetime show.
They sold it as six.
Three
one-hour specials
that they chopped up into six specials.
Huh. They were still doing stand-up specials or comedy specials back then.
I had not heard that.
And they're like,
I didn't realize that.
So Brandon, I think it was Brandon Tartikoff or someone at NBC who was in
charge. Warren Littlefield.
Someone was like, we'll sneak these six little mini run of these episodes, almost like a
because he had stand up in it,
right?
They could say this is like a comedy special. They basically just snowed their own executives into like doing this thing, and it was okay. But then it caught on. I mean, look, Seinfeld's an old reference, but for us, it was a reference that like it meant something to us.
How old were you guys when you first started like realizing that comedy was something you were interested in?
I mean, the first time we did comedy, we were 14 years old, and we're 46 now. So 32 years ago, we stepped on a stage and did comedy and literally stood on stage the way we stand on stage now. Now, we stole a lot of our material.
So
we stole it all from Carlos Mencia.
Yeah, which was very
irony.
It's ironic.
I mean, it was very odd because he hadn't even been doing
comedy.
We beat him to the punch.
That is the original.
He's going to build a fence score.
That is that we were talking about that back in 84. 86. But no, we started off and, we wrote a little bit of material, but we also did some material from some of our favorite comedians. And then a friend of ours in Kansas City, who we just did he does a great movie podcast.
He's gone on to do this movie Question and A called Backstory. It was a magazine for a while. His name is Jeff Goldsmith. Really cool. Yeah, check it out.
Q&A, I think, is the name of the podcast. They do it after movies, and he has huge movie. So he just did a Q&A for our movie, which is out right now, called Poop Talk. It's a docu-comedy in the line of sort of the aristocrats.
Mm-hmm. It's about poop. It's like, why is this something that everybody does, yet people don't talk about? So we talked to 50 comedians.
Kumail Nanjiani, Pete Holmes.
Nikki Glaser. We had Eric Stone Street from Modern Family. Nick Swardson.
Jonah
Ray. Really great, funny comedians. Just talking about this. Why is it difficult?
Brad Williams tells one of the greatest poop stories I've ever heard, and it's not even about poop. It's really about his life as a person, as a dwarf comedian. And it's unreal.
We love Brad.
Brad's phenomenal. There's so many. Kira Sultanovich tells an unbelievable story. And so it's a mixture of all these it's a weirdly profound film about poop, and it's about the human experience. And so
it was released this past weekend, came out the same weekend as Black Panther. We realized we should have called ours the Brown Panther.
Brown Panther would have been a great name for you.
Ball drops.
I think you might have gotten some angry emails about
I don't know.
you might have. I mean, yeah, people are upset about a Black Panther movie.
Yeah, wait, Lady Turd
could have been.
Lady Turd would have been great.
Get it out. So this guy, Jeff Goldsmith, is relevant because he interviewed us after this movie, and it was a circle of life because back when we were 15, he lived in Kansas City. We lived in St. Louis.
We knew him through like Jewish youth group. He was doing comedy sports, and he said, I just found out from our boss at where we are doing comedy, improv comedy, that there's this young comedian special, 16 years old and younger, that they're trying to get this show developed in L.A., we were in St. Louis at the time where we grew up. And
here's the address. Send in the tape of you guys doing stand-up at your school when you were 14, because we were 15 at the time. And we were like, okay, great. So we sent it in. Never expected to hear anything from anyone. And like a month later, we get a call from this production company that's making the show, and they're like, "We want you in the show. You're like our in our 10 finalists, and we got hundreds of tapes." And like, so it that show ultimately didn't happen, and they were like, "Obviously, you can't do material that isn't yours. Yeah. You got to write all your own material, and we'll get you up at a local comedy club next week." And we're like, so we called the club, and the club said, "You're too young. There's no way we'll put you
not
on
even
stage.
Allowed in the building."
No, and then they said, "What's the club?" We're like, "It's a Funny Bone." And so then they called up and they got us on stage, and so we did a like a regular night of and we were not great,
not ready
because we were doing material that we had never done before,
and you were 15,
and we were 15 and trying to relate to adults.
Nobody's good at anything. At
Dave Chappelle was doing stand up when he, around that same time when he was like 15, 16 years old.
But did he make it on the special?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Special didn't happen.
Special didn't happen. I don't think. But what it told us in a weird, tiny way was, there's something about us and there's something about what we do that puts us in the conversation. And if we could someday figure out how to really do comedy, then I think there's a spot for us.
So that was like the beginnings.
So, okay. I have a lot of questions.
Sure.
Jesus, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's all right. I guess I'm fascinated by the style and I'm fascinated about how it evolved. So you're telling me you two started off just performing together, two microphones.
Yeah, I mean, because it was born out of no real choice that we made, except to that we both love comedy, let's both do it. We weren't like, should I do it and then you do it? You know, it was just like, we both love it, let's just get up there and do it. I mean, we were influenced by Letterman.
Sure.
You know, like Letterman's comedy influenced us so much. I'll never forget a bit he did, and this was so indicative of, he did on the show where he was reading letters from the mailbag. And some guy wrote in and was like, "Hey, Dave, just a question. What?" He's like,
"Your eyebrows are
a different color than your hair. So in which case, what do you dye, your hair or your eyebrows? Sincerely, Gary,
I remember that one.
Sincerely, Gary Brown, St. Louis, Missouri. P.S. The Mets are pond scum." That's what he said. As a St. Louis guy, and we grew up in St. Louis, and it was like the years, it was around the mid-80s when the Mets won in 84. The Cardinals went to the World Series in 85 and lost to the Royals.
Mets won
the World Series in 86. Then the Cardinals went to the World Series in 87. So there was like a big rivalry between those two teams.
There still is to this day.
They hated each other in that way. But it's more now Mets, Cardinals, Cubs and whatnot. But back then it was really deep. So P.S. the Mets are pond scum. And that, it was just such a simple thing because it wasn't really what the letter was about. And Dave is like, "Hold it right there, Gary. The Mets are, in fact, not pond scum, and I'll prove it to you with this chart."
Right.
Pulls out a chart and is like, "Let's go through this, Gare, shall we? Mets occasionally damp. All right, same with the pond scum. Pond scum also occasionally damp. Mets consume microbes. Pond scum also consumes microbes." All right, Gary. Fine.
Here's a difference. Mets available for ponds, available for free agency after 5 years. Pond scum not available for free agency.
You know, and it said, "Okay, the Mets have one player named Mookie. Pond scum, everyone is named Mookie." Hilarious. But, I mean, the fact that we remember this bit to this day.
That's a 33-year-old.
Yeah.
But what was brilliant about it is he took one tiny thing and then built this gorgeous, beautiful bit around it. And that, more than anything.
Or his writers did.
Or his writers did. And he and his writers did. And to us, we're like, that is what our comedy should always be all about. Here's a tiny little truth. And then how do we build a whole bit around it? And so more than any two people standing on stage doing comedy, because there really wasn't a bunch right at that point that we could look to. I mean, the Smothers Brothers were already, they already did it.
Sure. Yeah.
They did one where one was the dumb one and the other one was the smart one. And we're like, we can't really
Abbott and Costello did that.
Sure.
Martin and Lewis essentially did that. I mean, every team had this dynamic of like a straight man, someone trying to rope the crazy guy in and the guy's going crazy. And for some reason, that didn't speak to us. And as we really started to develop our comedy, we were like, well, we're twins, so that makes us different than all those other teams.
Yeah, it's not plausible that one of you...
Or maybe...
Everybody assumes you have the same personality.
Or similar personality or similar abilities. Yeah. And so we're like, what's fun about us? You know, that's... to me, that's always the journey for comedians. Like... How am I funny in my real life? And then who am I being on stage? And how do I bring those two together so that they're the one thing? And that's how you find your comedic voice, when you really pull what makes you funny off in the world, or when you're being funny with your friends.
Very well said.
Okay, so we're saying to ourselves, what makes us funnier? Well, when are we at our funniest? It's when we're riffing. It's when we're one-upping each other. It's when we're adding on to each other. It's when we're agreeing with each other.
It's when we're taking like some simple, small thing and blowing it out.
Exaggerating to the point where it's ridiculous and hilarious. And so we said, okay, that's what we do. And if we can start to capitalize on that, then we can be like a postmodern comedy team where there is no straight man and funny man. Where oftentimes, you know, we were also heavily influenced by the Beastie Boys. The Beastie Boys to us were funny.
Right.
They were talented. They had skill. They were Jews. And they were cool in a way that a lot of white Jewish people were not cool.
The trifecta.
They had street cred. They had cred across the board. Yep. And for us,
I would argue they're probably the coolest Jews in the history of Jews.
And by the way, that includes Jesus. Yeah. Who was a cool Jew. But we took this, we took what they were doing and we understood we were enormous fans of theirs. They would overlap each other. They would back each other up.
They would talk to each other and then talk out to the to the crowd
together, and they would bounce.
So that was an influence in a weird way of what we did.
I don't think in a weird. I think I can. And now you say it, I can definitely see that.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think we loved that stuff. And we were also trying to forge our own path and voice. And so we really worked hard over the years to say, let's just do something that if we weren't us, we would find funny.
It's probably a good rule of thumb for starting stand-up.
It is. I mean, there are people who are like... I mean, there are two types of comedians that we've come to sort of
Could divide it this way.
You can divide comedians up many different ways.
Okay.
There are the types of comedians who are trying to get the biggest laughs out of the room and just wreck a room and destroy a room, and that's fine. But then there are also comedians who are trying to do the funniest stuff they can do. And hope that it really does well with the room.
Right.
That's the type of comedian we were always more drawn to, and that's the type of comedians we try and
do. Well, you feel like there's a little bit of an upward battle. They're coming at things not
so
much.
Trying to do the funniest thing in the world. Like, yes, they want, like, a guy like John Mulaney now, especially, is having an amazing comedy moment for him where he's a guy who would do the funniest things that he could think of, and it's destroyed.
And it's destroying the room. Pete Holmes. Right. Funniest stuff you've done, and destroying the room. Kumail Nanjiani, same thing. Dave Attell, same thing. You know,
Gaffigan, same thing. But like, there are definitely comedians who will just do the thing that you know will make the crowd go crazy, and
they'll be dancing monkeys.
And that's not exactly what we do.
It's a little easier.
That's not what we do. And so, if you are really working to try and make the funniest thing you can make, then that's the type of comedians we want it to be.
Interesting. So we understand the influences. I get that. Now when you're practically trying to put together an act starting that young, is it difficult for you guys? Do you sit down and write independently of each other? Do you write together? And then when you write independently, how do you decide who gets to throw out the punchline, who does what? I mean, there's a lot to what you do.
There is, and that's a great question.
I imagine there's a lot of Rochambeau involved.
A little bit of that.
I think, we've now figured it out that what's great is that we each have families and we each live separate lives from each other that, now we're experiencing a lot in our lives that we can then bring back to the table. It almost functions like a band. It's like I was watching the Peter Bogdanovich documentary of Tom Petty, may he rest in peace, where
Peter Bogdanovich died?
No, Tom Petty. But same to Peter Bogdanovich, may he rest in peace. Well, he's not dead, I just want him to get a good
parents,
night's sleep.
As parents, little kids, you want
him to get a good night's sleep. May he rest in a peaceful resting. Yeah. All right, so, but the Bogdanovich documentary talked about when Petty was on the road and writing The Waiting. So like they were touring on another album and he would like walk in from his hotel room to the other guy's rooms and just be like, and we'd play that over and over again. All he had was the opening guitar riff of this song. And out of that, they wrote The Waiting.
They got so annoyed with him.
You gotta fucking write a song. Like, 'cause I don't want to hear this anymore. And so like that, the idea of having the kernel of an idea. So we'll go out and live our lives,
like recently in my life, my kids were dying for us to get guinea pigs. Now, we're on the road from time to time, and I'm like, I don't want to add, we have a dog and a fish. I'm like, I don't want to add more animals to it. The idea, the prospect of having these things really bothered me.
Sure.
By the way, that's always a great source that you know comedy is going to come out of the fact if you are uncomfortable with something happening in your life.
Great.
So I'm like, I do not want these. And my kids wore me down, and they made PowerPoint presentations about how they're going to be better people, and like, you can't ignore that as a parent. And so finally I said, well, all right, fine, we're gonna make the leap, we are going to get these.
Well, you complained about it to me
and then
first, and I did say, we'll try and squeeze something out of this, like get them to do behave well.
So then I started to use it against them. I'm like, you're gonna get
weaponized
guinea pigs. I was like, that's funny, I'm gonna use that. Straight A's, you're gonna
weaponize the argument.
So you're gonna get straight A's, you're gonna not fight with each other, or I'll wipe every guinea pig off the face of the earth. Throwing out guinea pig genocide into the argument. And then I was like, you're gonna do some chore, you do the dishes, you're gonna make your beds. I mean, I literally was forcing them.
But he told me about this, and I was like, well, wouldn't it be funny if you also got them to do stuff around the neighborhood?
It's like there's potholes that need to be filled in our thing. And then I'm like trying to stuff DACA into it. I was like,
you gotta protect the dreamers.
Yeah, I literally gotta protect the dreamers. I think I used the phrase pathway to citizenship when talking about it. So I mean, again, so like the truth of the matter is I was coming down hard on my kids because I didn't want these things.
But he explained to me, and so then we started riffing on like, what else could you make them do? Can you do things around the neighborhood?
So then the bit started that way. Then our mom comes to visit, and she stays at my house, and she stays in the basement where these guinea pigs are. And I go to pull the mattress out of the crawl space, and Jay's like, wait, you have a mattress for mom in the crawl? Like, what are you, keeping mom?
It's like the hostage situation of that, like, family.
They kept their 10 kids chained up. That's the way you're keeping mom in the house.
You could have just given her the bedding from the guinea pig.
Yeah, no, right? It's just, I put her there. Mom, you can pee on it. It's fine.
Right.
So I pull the mattress out on the fold-out couch, and there's rat shit on top of the mattress, like fresh rat shit. And I was like, oh my god, we now have rats in our basement and these guinea pigs are in the basement. And I call over the exterminator and he comes over.
So meanwhile, Randy's like, I have a rat problem. I'm like, you actually have a rat, you have a rodent dilemma. Because because he calls the guy over from the exterminator.
And exterminator's there, my kids are there.
And the guinea pigs are downstairs.
Guinea pigs are downstairs, and I'm like telling my kids what to do with the guinea pigs while explaining to this guy what's going on. And so it really became a conversation between...
But really, it's like, these are the rodents we love, and these are the rodents we want you to fucking murder. Right? You know what I mean?
So suddenly that becomes a bit. So that idea, then we're like, okay, this happened in my life. How can we now put this into the two of us? Okay, Jay, you...
So we just start improvising.
And I'm like, you be...
I'll be the exterminator,
and I'll be the person talking to my family, which I had to do, which I was like, Daisy, my daughter, go get the little eyedropper with the vitamin C and put it in S'mores' mouth and make sure she likes to lick the...
I'm like, there's a rat right over there.
Snap its fucking
neck. Snap its neck.
Yeah. All right. So,
step on it.
Yeah. Make sure he's dead.
Okay.
Make sure there's not even like a breath of life coming out of it.
Yes.
Georgia, go upstairs and get the fresh cut vegetables for the... You know what I mean? I like style going over there.
And then I keep... And then I bump it up. I'm like, the head is off, sir.
Put it on a stick and wave it around the neighborhood.
Okay. Show it to the other rats. It's like a Lord of the Flies.
Do that. So I mean, suddenly... So this thing of not when... So I came to the unit of the two of us with the concept of, okay, now I got guinea pigs, and what am I going to do? And then we're like, how is that a bit? Is there a bit in it? And then when the rat exterminator came over, I'm like, oh, this is definitely a bit. And, you know, really it's a bit about what we do for our kids. It's a bit about what we withstand as parents. It's a bit about...
The hypocrisy of parenting, which comes up all the time. The things that you think, like... We would never be like dealing with guinea pigs.
If I didn't have kids, I wouldn't have guinea pigs.
Right.
Like the stuff you have to
do. No one would have a guinea pig.
Right.
If nobody.
They'd
be extinct.
Right. The stuff you have to do as a parent, it forces you into areas that you wouldn't normally do.
Sure.
So that to us is an interesting concept that we're kind of dealing with. And then like the idea of, in a larger sense, what we deem as pets versus what we deem as menaces.
The hypocrisy of
they could be right next to each other on the chart. It was almost ridiculous, us as human beings, the amount of stuff we do for these rodents versus the ones that... So to me, that was really funny about that. And we're like, okay, that could be a whole bit. Right there's a whole bit. So that's a new big bit in our act. And the idea that, you know, this is how we write now. Okay, I live my life and this happened and now let's get into it.
And again, you take the principle of here's something very small and then you build it into something.
And it's also an educational bit. It's how to psychologically torture and manipulate your children.
And how to terrify exactly.
Yes.
And so it's, you know, that to us was like, wow, this is how we write now. So we live life. Something happens.
We bring the kernel of whatever the bit is to the
table, and we sit down and say, okay, we start working it. And then we'll put it up in L.A. We'll start to put it up on shows in L.A., and we'll start to, like, you know, at the Comedy Store and the improv, and then a bunch of other shows that we like to go on. And
we'll cycle through it, and then when we're done cycling through it, or when we feel like it's close,
sure,
we get to come on the road. And you get to do it 5 shows over 3 nights. I mean, it'll just get better, especially if the crowd. That's what we say about. That's another good way to tell if a club is a good club or not and has good audiences. How much did you write this weekend on stage?
Right. How much do you write on stage? Because if you're getting laughs, your brain starts to think of 3 or 4 tags that you maybe wouldn't have said, or you start to say things.
If you're not getting laughs, or if you're battling tough crowds, then you go into hunker down mode, and you're like, all right, let's plow through. Let's get to the next bit. You aren't even – it's such an amazing –
you're not enjoying it.
Yeah, it's such an amazing difference. Like when your brain – is when you have time to think up on stage and the luxury of time because the audience is laughing, you have the confidence of the laughter, the luxury of the time, your synapses start firing and you'll think of like 2 or 3 funny things.
All right, I got to ask this.
Sure.
It's interesting to me that, you know, you work a bit out, you do it a couple times in LA, you're working on it on stage, but in terms of the communication between you two as a comedy team on stage, how much freedom when there's 2 of you working together do you have to improv and go in different directions? I'm sure you're very comfortable with each other, but like, do you like tap them and go and try something? Like, I mean, how do you do it?
One person starts going into it, the other person follows. Have that
trust.
Yeah, like trust improv. You got to trust it. And the truth of the matter is, we leave it loose enough that we can surprise ourselves. I mean, Jay did Curb Your Enthusiasm, and so, you know, the brilliance of that show is that there wasn't
a script.
There is just a scenario. Yes. And so you have to listen to what the other person is saying.
So we leave a couple things loose, some improvs within our set where we know where it's going, but who knows what we're going to say within that, and how we get there is different every single time, and it forces us to be in the moment and listen, and it forces real moments to happen on stage, which is what you want to happen as much as possible. You don't want to just be going through your act.
I love that. I mean, keeping yourself present for the audience, but still being able, knowing that you're working on something that's funny.
The worst thing is to watch a comic in a sort of like in a dead way go through his or her act.
Yeah, you can
the
tell.
The same just way.
Machine, it's just auto-tune.
Autopilot. Auto-tune would be very funny.
Autopilot would be...
What about the guinea pigs?
Yeah. Men and women are different. But that is it. I mean, and I think it's also a lot of... We've developed this skill.
This is the skill part about it, is to be able to be talking and listening at the same time. It is a very subtle skill, but if you are speaking and you feel the other person talking, or if you're both kind of talking at the same time, you hear someone hit on something,
you don't want to both be like talking.
Sure.
I think everybody imagines you guys having this idyllic relationship, but
yeah,
you had to have walked off stage a couple times and turned to him and go, "What the fuck was that?"
Yes. Yeah, oh yeah.
There are moments where, like, you know, we're very hypercritical of each other.
Sure. Yeah,
as critical as you are of yourself, and most comedians are like super critical of themselves.
Now he thinks he's pretty great.
Oh, you think you're great?
I'm very critical of him.
So you get
how that works.
So
smart.
Watch an episode of the show.
We allow each other. We are actually super critical of each other in a way that you would only be critical of yourself.
Sure.
You know, we say I'm the hardest on myself. Well, we're also super hard on each other. So if someone will come off stage and be like, "You need to say this differently. You're not saying it right." Luckily, there isn't this like lingering anger that could become a wedge that then would drive it apart. It's like, yeah, I do need to say that better.
32 years as partners. What's the longest you two have gone without talking to each other?
Oh my God. I don't know, a week, like maybe. Really? But that's just because I was gone out of town for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, never out of anger, just out of
proximity. Just out of being proximity. I mean, we also understand that this is like how we support our families, sure, too.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, like we can't let our own petty bullshit get in the way of this thing that we're trying to create. I mean,
and we spend so much time on this. Like, it'd be the dumbest thing in the world to have an argument end what we've spent years building.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, but it would never go to the place where we hate each other so much. We get mad at each other. We fight with each other. We're sure. brothers. I mean, there's no siblings in history that... Yeah. I mean, even the Shibu Sibs, who are the the brother sister.
Wow, that's a deep
the
cut reference.
Brother sister ice dancing duo from the United States. Like, they fight with each other. By the way, there are moments during like their long program when like the music. I'm like,
do not look in her eyes.
I'm like, is that
not look in her eyes like that?
Too romantic of a song.
The two of you.
Do not look down her shirt like that.
Don't.
Why do you have to hold her like that?
Like, they don't
hold her by the hips.
Yeah.
Hold her by the hips. And face her away.
Like,
from
there are
you.
Too many moves. Like, yeah.
Right.
Someone
right.
we were talking to today said, don't pick her up by the pubic mound.
Oh, God.
So,
pubic mound? Yeah.
Get your hand off your sister's pubic mound.
Right now.
And so, the idea that, like, yeah. they're every sibling, even those guys who seem, you know, so we fight and all that stuff. But by the same token, we both love comedy. We sure. both love this thing that we're doing.
I mean, I think it's also since we've had kids and we have our own families, you know, when you become a parent and if you do care about your children and you're not, like, a narcissist asshole, you put your children first. And
sure.
when your children, you sublimate your own desires and wants and needs in life just so that you can help your kids survive and thrive and become people. And you spend a lot of your time going to their activities, doing their things with them, making sure they're okay, teaching them, getting them to go to sleep and stuff like that. So when we go and do comedy now, it feels like a gift for us because...
Oh, we're like, you guys are here to see us? Wait, you're here to...
Someone's
help?
Like, I got you guys an extra Diet Coke. It's in the green room. Or, you know, we made the salads are waiting for you in the green room. I'm like, who the fuck are you talking to? Oh, us! Okay. You're taking care of us. So that's what happens when we get to go on the road. And
just very happy to be there.
Well, it's a joy. This feels really awesome. We get to be adults and we get to...
it's a good weekend. I mean, it can be stressful in the other way. Like,
sure.
you could be stressed because, you know, we have three ideas that we're pitching out into the world, and for whatever reason, two of them don't go. And you're saying to yourself, wow, I thought this was going to be a TV show on True TV. I thought this was going to be a Netflix thing. I thought this was going to be this idea. And you've worked hard and put a ton of energy sure. and a ton of effort where you didn't get paid for it out there to sell something, and then it doesn't go. And then you're like, oh, shit, now I got to go on the road, leave town, leave my family, leave my spouse, leave all the responsibilities of taking care of our kids while we go to a town where we don't know what the club is like. We're not selling tickets for whatever reason. And like that can sure. compound your stress. Conversely, it can lift you out of whatever funk you're in. As you go on stage and there's a great room like you guys have here, and we do a really good job with the crowds. We get good crowds. We sell our merch, and you write on stage and you say to yourself, okay, whatever just happened there in LA, we're going to be fine because we can always keep creating material. And look at this tiny little thing that we created, this little joke that we wrote that didn't exist before this weekend, and now we have it.
It's a treat.
Yeah.
Yeah, literally it is like growth.
No, it's that moment where you realize, like, okay, maybe I can't afford to go to the grocery store anymore, but I can farm. I can right. grow my own shit. I can make my own stuff. And that's sort of what stand-ups have that just actors who are waiting around for roles don't have. I mean, we've our mantra in this business has been create. Don't wait, create. I love that I didn't know our own mantra.
Yeah, it's great.
Don't wait, create. Don't wait, comma, create. You have the ability to make something even while you're waiting for
it. It's like the first time you learned you could masturbate. You're like, oh, I have the power to make myself,
I got a date at 7 o'clock.
I know. It's like, I've got the power to give myself pleasure right here. I have all the tools right here that
you
I
do.
Need.
You, and as comedians, like, go, you're feeling down about yourself. This thing didn't work out that you thought.
Go do a set of comedy.
Go create a new bit of comedy that you can get behind and you can start building and put your creative energies in that. And
tells you, all right, I can build this.
Good things will come out of it.
Yeah, nothing feels better than a new bit that works.
It feels...
How would you know?
So you've been told. Yeah, so he's been told. So he's been,
I read. They just said it.
Yeah.
We just,
yeah. Nothing's better than it.
So I got to ask you guys. Sure. I want to remind everybody watching, by the way, get your tickets to the Sklar Brothers. 4 more shows this weekend. 2 tonight, 7:30 and 10 o'clock. Same for tomorrow. Comedy at the Carlson. CarlsonComedy.com. 5854 comedy. And I will not stutter through that again. I can always mess up that number. I don't know what's
a lot of information.
It's a lot of information. It's worth it because you can come see the Sklar Brothers. I agree.
It's valuable information.
Yeah.
Now, we ask every... You've given us a lot of really good advice.
Yeah.
A lot of really good advice and approach to stand-up in general.
Right.
But I want to ask you a question, and this is something we're doing for a new part of our YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. Do you have any specific advice to anybody who's never stepped on stage before that wants to?
Yes. My advice would be study the comedians you love and try and, almost like it's a class, you're doing research, mm-hmm. and then try and understand the way you would do a book report or do a review of something. Try and understand why you love this comedian. Why do I love Maria Bamford? Well, she's stream of consciousness and it can go in any different direction, and she doesn't announce she's going to start doing a character. She just breaks into it.
But that's born out of the truth of her own
fractured mind. Right. Okay, so why is this great? Because she took the thing that was like her greatest personal weakness and shows it on stage in a way that's almost
call
a strength.
It a weakness.
It's not a weakness. I'm saying the thing that like... Her not weakness, I mean pain. Takes her personal pain right. and releases that out in a way that is strong, in a way that's like incredible, and she does it as characters, and yep. again, it is stream of consciousness and it goes everywhere. Why do I love, you know, Jeff Ross? Because he is such an unbelievable joke writer and roasts the shit out of people.
And he, in a heartbeat, can sum up a person's entire existence with a quick and funny
joke. Never does it in a mean way. Right. So it's like he's took this thing and isn't mean about it. So you start to say, why do I love this person? Why do I love that person? Okay, then you say to yourself, what do I bring to the table that's uniquely my own thing? And then how do I fit into this whole, you know, sort of cadre of comedians? And how? So it takes a lot of watching and observing. I would also argue, go and be a part of a good comedy scene that pushes you to write stuff, that doesn't allow easy material to get through.
Yep. Yep.
So there are good comedy scenes in a lot of cities. Like, they're just, you know, if you're not in that city right now, I would say try and head to the if you're doing well in your city where you're at, mm-hmm. you want to head to the Chicagos and the Denvers and the San Franciscos and those places to try and be around a comedy scene that pushes you to write really good stuff.
And that's the biggest thing about comedy. I really like your mantra, don't wait, create.
Yeah.
It's if you're not in a scene that's pushing you, it's very easy to go to an open mic and just
make do the same set for 5 years.
Yes. Or do a set that is like very basic and easy, because yeah, people will laugh
sure.
at basic shit. I mean, it's the reason why, you know, it's the reason why America's Funniest Home Videos is like you swing a wiffle ball bat into your dad's junk and he falls over and people laugh. I mean, there's a whole show. You're smiling right now. Stop laughing at him.
Why are you supporting that?
You're ruining America, Vinny.
I hate my dad.
No,
Well, that makes sense.
That's way funnier.
No, but the idea that, like, that you can get by and get laughs on basic stuff. But if you're really sure. trying to, that will not sustain you, because you can't have a voice on basic humor. You can't create your own voice. Mm-hmm. I mean... There again, you could get laughs, but it's how are you doing it? Are you doing it the right way?
All right, that's a very interesting thought. So teach stand-up and treat stand-up like it's a class.
Yeah, study the comedians you love and understand why you love them.
Yeah, and then try to understand, then you have to look inward and look at yourself.
Then it's like what he was saying before. Why are you funny around your friends and coworkers and family? Where are you?
What inspired you initially to get into comedy? Where people were saying, man, nobody tells a story like you. Or you just know how to spin long, awesome stories.
Or you have great timing. You can come up, or you just always come up with...
You're so good on the fly. You're so quick. All right, well, then put that energy into your act. Create moments where you can be great on the fly. Like, create situations where you are telling... You know, you don't... Other comedians might get up and tell 300 jokes or 40 jokes in their 10-minute set.
If you're a great storyteller, tell one great story and fill it with great jokes. Don't try to be anyone else. Try to be the funny version of you, and that's how you get closer to your comedic voice.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You can see the Sklar Brothers this weekend, Comedy at the Carlson. Guys, where can we see your movie? That's where I want to know, because I want to find this thing.
Poop today. Talk. It's available now. It's on iTunes, Amazon.
I'm going to say this right now.
On demand. If you are a lover of comedy, this is for people who love comedians. All your favorite comedians are in this movie, and this movie shows why comedians are like amateur anthropologists. We study human behavior, and then we turn around and reflect it back to the audience or the crowd or the public with a twist.
Why does everybody poops? Everybody. It doesn't matter. Like, not everybody's having sex. It.
Yes.
Is this a novelization or a dramatization based on that book?
Everybody poops?
Yeah, Tara Gomi. She would be proud of what we did.
No, but this is a chance for comedians to... Like, originally, we were approached by the director of the movie a couple years ago to make this movie. He said, I want to make a history of poop. And we're like... No, we don't want to.
He said, "Do you guys help me?" We were like, "No, it's not our brand. It's not our style."
And Aaron Feldman wisely said, "Take the weekend, think about it, and come back and tell me the type of movie you would make on this subject."
And we were like, "We really thought about it over the weekend. We talked a lot. We were like, can we do this? What if it's terrible and we make, you know, pardon the pun, but a shitty movie and it's not for the right reasons?
Yeah.
What if it's really successful? What if lots of people see it and suddenly
we're
the poop guys forever?"
And that's not who we are, and that you've seen our stand up. That's not, it's not, we don't like, you know, it's not a scatological stand up act. So we came back to him and we said, if we can have an open, honest discussion about poop with funny people, it'll obviously be funny. If we can try as hard as we can to go as highbrow as possible with this, I think, and not make it like disgusting and scatological, but really get at the sort of human element and the human behavior that surrounds it, we would do this film. And he's like, that's the kind of film I want to make. So we contacted you. We leaned on our relationships and our comedic reputation and told people, we'll make sure you're funny. We'll make sure we won't make you look bad.
We're going to make a good movie. And it's now sitting there with like an 86 on Rotten Tomatoes, which very difficult to be in the 80s.
Yeah.
We would have accepted the 70s because we're like, we know it's a difficult subject matter for people to get behind. You say poop talking, you know, I mean, again, we really wanted to call it like Fecal Matters and stuff like that. But like,
they said poop talk would be a sort of more broader way
to get people. So we knew even with an unimaginative title, we would have issues. But people really have liked it. Now the question is, can we get it out to as many people as possible? So it is available on demand on your cable, iTunes, Amazon. If you see it and you like it, watch it, rate it, you know, give it a good rating. That always helps out. But it's a really funny 70-minute movie. That is, like, if you like The Aristocrats, I feel like you will love this. It's a new generation, somewhat version of that, but I mean, some brilliant and hilarious stories in it.
I'm all in on this. I'm gonna get a copy of it later today. I'll probably just buy it.
Thank you, thank you. And we have a stand-up special coming out on Stars, on the Stars
Now. Network. Is this your fourth or your fifth?
So this stand-up special we're doing,
it'll be our fourth.
We did 2 half-hours on Comedy Central. Uh-huh. We did an hour on Netflix, and then we filmed this one last year in Chicago in February of last year. So like a year ago, last year we filmed it. It was supposed to go on CISO, which was a great, and then CISO
folded. Certainly was great.
Rest in peace.
Awesome. That's a rest in peace because they were doing some really good shows.
Yeah.
The bajillion-dollar properties and Shrink was so funny and all their stand-up specials. I mean,
they had stuff that was in production too that I was just bummed out. It was just...
Here's 2 specials they had this past year are amazing.
Nick Thune,
Fahim Anwar, who's unbelievable. Right. Brian Posehn, Janine Garofalo. These aren't just like...
Right.
These are great comedians doing specials on CISO. And so when we found out that they wanted our special, we were like, yeah, that's awesome. We love you guys. So we did the special for them, and then it never premiered because it folded before it. So then NBC Universal just made a deal with Stars, and Stars bought a lot of their content, and so that just happened last week. So our special.
So we have some Stars specials coming up.
So our special will be on Stars.
Our first question was not Black Stars,
right? That's
I would have liked to.
That would have been great. Just us, Morris Chestnut. No.
So it's probably going to be coming out in May on Stars, which we're very excited that that's going to come out. And then one more thing, we did an album. As you'll see us do comedy about Rochester here, So we did a comedy album. It's really an audio book that we did for Audible that's going to come out the first week in April.
Okay, so very soon.
Very soon. It's called Scholars and Stripes. And we, whenever we go around and do comedy, you'll see comedians do this, but we try and write 5 to 10 minutes of material about the town we're in that weekend. What are you guys experiencing in Rochester? What are you dealing with?
What are your local landmarks? What are your
how food? Sick are we going to be after we have a garbage plate? You know, like that sort of a scenario.
Sick of all other food.
Sick of everything. Yeah.
Well, all other food is in a garbage plate, I feel like. Just it is all of the
food. There is no other food. So, so it's experiencing that and writing that material. So we did that in 10 cities. Each city is a 30 to 40 minute chapter in this audiobook on Audible. And then basically we go in, plane lands on Thursday. Can we write 10 minutes of material?
By Saturday night.
You hear us audio-wise going around the town trying to write the material. And then you hear the stand-up at the end as like fully formed bits. So it is a documentary about what it's like to be comedians at our level. It's a documentary about what it's like to be in those towns right now. And then it's a documentary about the evolution of a joke. What is the comedic process? How do we write jokes? And then the fourth documentary that emerged, which we couldn't really foresee, was that our first weekend that we did was in San Diego the weekend after the election. So now we're in San Diego, which is a bit of a mixed town because you got military and older people, retired people, and then you got young people and Mexicans who are like, what the fuck? Why did Trump get elected? And so
then what followed was the most tumultuous year politically we've ever
had. So this is a documentary about the year when everybody was retreating into their bubbles and saying, I'm going to my right-wing bubble, I'm going to my liberal bubble, and we will ne'er the twain shall meet. As comedians, we're out in the world. So we went.
Get a job. You got to go do the job.
We go to the comedy festival in Tulsa. We go to Kansas City, which is in Kansas. We go to St. Louis in Missouri. Houston. We go to Houston. We go to Indiana. We go to Wisconsin. So we're going to these places that went the direction you didn't think it was going to go, or they went exactly how you thought it was going to go. And we're trying to make them laugh and do comedy and point out what's going on. So it was an amazing project.
So you're telling me you went to places where, and I mean, it's not about your political beliefs. It's just about the political beliefs of what's going on.
Yeah.
And just kind of like taking the temperature of the country.
Kind of. And then also trying to be like, what are you guys dealing with and how are you feeling and what's going on? And can we poke fun at this? Like, can we make hurricane jokes in Houston after when we're down there? And yeah, you can when you're making fun of Joel Osteen, who is the pastor.
Yeah.
Who's the pastor, which, by the way, sucks that he's got a Jewish last name.
Osteen.
That's terrible.
Sounds like a dentist.
Sounds like all the all the Jews run the mega churches now.
We went out to his church to see it's where the Rockets used to play. That's how big his church was.
We were like, because the whole knock on him is that he said our church was getting damaged by the hurricane and we're like getting flooded.
So they wouldn't let anyone in. Meanwhile, we drive there.
It's on higher ground. It was completely dry.
There's no way it was flooded at all. We tried to go in. The doors were locked.
We're like, what are we, hurricane victims?
Let us in.
And so it was.
Well, you do that joke on stage, and there was a huge catharsis.
Huge cathartic response. And, interesting. You know, we even went at him and saying, like, it sucks that you guys win the World Series, but you had a hurricane have to come along with it. Like, why is that, Houston? You can't just enjoy the World Series.
Right.
You got to, like, people are like, hey, we won the World Series, but my house floated away.
It's summertime. We can run. Oh, no, it's 112 and 120% humidity in Houston.
It's like a fat guy sitting on your head all day long for 3 months. And so, you know, in Houston, we went after those things. So it is fascinating. It's called Scholars and Stripes. And then we pull 6 minutes of the most universal 6 minutes of stand-up from each city of 10 cities and make a comedy album. And we're going to release that, too, called Scholars and Stripes. So all that shit's coming out. That'll be on Audible. That's at the beginning of April, and the album will be out right away, and then we've got our special coming out on Stars.
Awesome.
Sweet.
Well, let's end it with two dumb questions.
Yeah.
Brian, did you have a dumb question you wanted to ask?
I just want to know, what is the dumbest twin question you've ever been asked?
We've been asked.
I assume it happened on a morning radio show. But.
Does it have anything to do with pinching each other?
Yeah. No, I think one said, do you guys ever switch on girls? Like, do you ever switch on girls?
Yeah, like you're having sex with her, and then
you leave again. You mean rape somebody?
No, we've never.
But I'm glad that you're expressing your aspirations. What you would do if you had a twin? Crazy. So that's probably the dumbest one we've ever had.
Yeah, and then sometimes they're just people are too fascinated by the fact that we finish each other's sentences. They're like, oh, you guys are. It's amazing. You guys finish each other's sentences. That's so. And then we're like, do we finish each other's sentences?
Or have I not been able to finish a sentence in 45 years?
That's right. And I'm like,
it all depends on how you look at it. I'm like, let's focus less on us not being able to finish each other's sentences and on O.J. Simpson not being able to finish one sentence.
Yeah, how about he finishes one
of the ones that he was. Sorry, Bills fans. So.
They don't love him.
He's gone.
Yeah.
What's your dumb question?
Oh, I was going to ask you how often you guys get confused for the Property Brothers.
So I saw one of the Property Brothers in like the celebrity NBA All-Star game, and I'm like, what the
fuck? Get the
fucking
kidding me.
They want to be like magicians, I think.
No, they think they're comedians. These guys think they're comedians. So we...
I didn't know there was twin beef.
When we did... There's no twin beef. I probably would love those guys.
And the triplets, the Property Brothers.
Are they really?
Yeah, there's a third.
There's a third? There's a Cooper Manning
flavor. They're a sham?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, so we did this whole thing on... By the way, I think they're good at what they do. But I don't think they should be magicians or comedians.
Yeah, no, they're good at fixing houses and flipping things over. But the idea that, we did this thing on Bajillion Dollar Properties, which was on CISO, where we played the... I hope this comes out at some point. We played the Property Brothers. that our name, our last names were Property.
Is Property.
Yeah. And so we wanted to be the Property Brothers, but because the Property Brothers already existed, we called ourselves the Property Brothers, and we tried to get everyone to keep using the phrase.
We're like, that's a great property
right there. And they're like, that is not a word. And I was like, well, you're just not seeing the opportunities in it.
There it is. All right, guys. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciated it. This was a really interesting conversation today. Great. Thank you for doing the show.
Thank you.
And best of luck with everything that you do. And we're gonna see us this weekend.
It's going to be a blast.
Yeah, in between watching Poop Talk, come out to the Carlson. It's going to be fun. Thank you for doing that.
You're very welcome. We'll see you guys next week. Who do we have coming in here next week? Jessie May Peluso. So excited about that.
She's awesome.
And all right, hit the credits, Nick. Let's get out of here.
You got it.